It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Some people think, oh, boys should only do this, and girls should only do that, or girls should think this, and boys should think that. It's not true.
And I told my dad I want some purple skinny jeans. He was like, are you crazy?
My closet was literally pink, and now it's almost all blues, blacks, and browns.
But remember that gender is not binary, right?
There's a spectrum.
We'd been discussing a lot of the gender issues in class, and to be honest, I didn't know what to expect.
Some of them seemed to be really thinking about it.
I think it had never occurred to him that you could look at the world this way, that you could take off these labels.
Turns out that they couldn't stop talking.
I like to wear sneakers, jeans, and I don't like dolls. I hate the color pink.
It doesn't matter what gender you are. It matters what kind of person you are.
It says here that she is too weak to stand up for herself. Are you too weak to stand up for yourself?
No.
No.
If I give you a marker, I want you to look at that color of marker and think to yourself, is this a boy color?
Yes.
Or is this a girl color? Or could this be both?
I thought that it was different, like you should dress like a girl if you're a girl, but I don't think that anymore.
Raise your hand if you're a boy and you can dance. Stand up, everybody can dance. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
I like doing things that boys like doing, like climbing trees and making paper airplanes.
It's okay to be what you want to be.
I was born as a girl, and then on the inside, I feel in the middle.
Think about your own issues. Think about what it brings up for you. Think about what you want for your children in the classroom.
You'd be surprised at how open-minded parents are, and even more so, how welcoming children are to learning about this.
You see kids embracing each other, loving each other, and that's the kind of community that we want to foster and model for the world.
Sandy Rios with you on this Friday, and could I just say that that is a masterful piece of propaganda produced by your National Education Association, the largest union for public school teachers in the nation. It's called Creating Gender Inclusive Schools. It's very persuasive, isn't it? Just warm and fuzzy, little sweet music in the background as we reframe, retrain our children to think about gender. You know, the National Education Association has been on the front lines of bending the minds of our children on sexual issues since at least the early 80s. I will never forget. Their first video project regarding this was called It's Elementary, and it was a video project shown to teachers nationwide to persuade them to be more tolerant of homosexuality, to teach their children to be more tolerant. It was the very beginning of it. It was very controversial. Even New York State fought back New York City Public Schools, a curriculum called the Rainbow Curriculum that was advocating for homosexuality to be mainstreamed. But naturally, as the faucet drips water and finally an indentation happens, they have made their mark. And so now today's public schools, today's culture, with your children and even some of you who are parents now, grew up in a school system that saturated you with the notion that sexuality was fluid, that there's nothing wrong with boys liking boys, girls liking girls. And now the next frontier, of course, is to fully implement this notion that there is no gender distinction. That's the National Education Association. Meanwhile, your kids turn on television, and of course, I don't need to explain to you what they see and how they are becoming more thoroughly brainwashed than I thought possible. I thought the job was done. I guess not. There's more to do. And what effect does that have on culture? Well, it has a lot of effect. In fact, we see this grand push under the Obama administration to bring transgenders into the military, which has real risks, real costs. We have an issue, just a story this week. Wisconsin has been ordered to pay for gender reassignment surgeries for two people on Medicaid. And the judge made the decision in such a way, as a U.S. District Court Judge William Conley, in such a way that it looks like if it stands, Wisconsin will now have to pay for gender reassignment surgeries for anyone who wants them on Medicaid. The practical consequence of that, just the practical monetary consequence, is surely bankruptcy for any state or government entity that takes that on. But of course, the more important issue is just the hearts and minds of American citizens. It's the blurring of lines which used to be clear. And really, the lines have not changed. It's only the culture that has become confused and intentionally confused the younger generations. So that leads me to the church, the new frontier in terms of LGBT activism. Oh, not so new, because they already overtook the mainstream denominations. They fell one by one. I remember the Episcopal Church was one of the first to fall. They were the first ones to nominate an openly gay homosexual bishop who left his wife and children for a man, and that was fine, Eugene Robinson. And that's how it began. But now it's evangelical churches who are front and center in the very crosshairs of the radical LGBT movement. And we want to talk about that today. And I've asked Dr. Robert Oscar Lopez to join me. Bobby is a good friend. You've heard him with me several times. He is a professor of English at Southwestern Seminary, but that's not his background. Bobby was raised by a lesbian mother who he loved very much, and her partner. He first spoke out about his experience with that when Dr. Mark Regnerus of University of Texas did a very large study on the effect of gay parenting on children. When Bobby spoke out about that as an English professor, then at Cal State Northridge, that's when the persecution of him personally began. Bobby had lived in a gay lifestyle for many years, became a follower of Jesus. His heart and mind changed. He left the lifestyle, got married, had children. He is a great writer. He's articulate. He writes a blog called EnglishManif.blogspot.com. And because of being raised by a lesbian mother and because of his own experiences in the homosexual culture and lifestyle, Bobby probably understands the ins and outs both of being in the lifestyle, being raised by a gay parent, but also the theology and the passion that Christ gives us for righteousness. And I've asked Bobby to join us this morning to just talk about what's happening in the evangelical church in this barrage that would seek to undermine the biblical underpinnings. Bobby, thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you, Sandy. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
All right. I want to talk to you first of all, Bobby, about the Human Rights Campaign. Let's start with that.
Okay.
You may not know, but I'll tell you that I certainly have debated the Human Rights Campaign. When I was president of Concerned Women for America, this was one of our main focuses, and we probably were debating homosexual activists, I don't know, at least once a week and sometimes many, many times a week. We were the leading organization on the front lines of fighting this. So Human Rights Campaign was very familiar to me, still is, and it is the most well-funded LGBT activist group in the country. It is behind all of the initiatives that have really altered the course of our culture. The Human Rights Campaign has been the smartest, most well-thought-out, including legalizing gay marriage. Anything to add to just characterizing them, Bobby?
I would say they're incredibly well-funded, and they have tactics that are consistently quite troubling. I have been placed on their websites several times with descriptions of me that are quite extreme, quite insulting. And I was somebody who came out of the gay community doubly in two ways. I not only was part of the lifestyle, but I also was raised by a gay parent. And they are ruthless. And wherever they go, there's a lot of trouble. I remember there was an export of hate report that they published in 2014, and they had hand-drawn pictures of 24 of us who were in the evangelical world. And they made pictures of us as if we were criminals, as if we were child molesters wanted by the FBI or something. And they said, these people are exporting hate, fight them, you've got to bring them down. I mean, they're they're very negative, even from a perspective of, let's say you sympathize with the gay community and you want them to thrive. There's a big question mark as to why the Human Rights Campaign remains silent on the domestic violence and the sexually transmitted diseases and the depression and anxiety that's in the gay community, among people who have already committed to being gay. So it's an organization with a lot of problems, and the Human Rights Campaign has recently come out with a series of booklets trying to train people to convince religious leaders to flip their position on homosexuality, and they just published one on coming home to evangelicalism, which we can talk about. It's very disturbing.
All right, let's do that, actually. I think they have also launched, have they not, Bobby, an official initiative to infiltrate evangelical churches in a strategic way to try to shift the theology or to mainstream the acceptance. So what's all that all about?
Well, there for decades, the divinity schools at secular colleges like Yale, I went there as an undergraduate and studied with John Boswell, there's been this trend of these intellectuals who find that the Bible is a really exciting thing for the left, because the idea that there's this all-powerful God who will be on the side of your cause for justice and will punish the people who oppose you, and if you are speaking truth to power and people are disagreeing with you, you're a prophet and they are the people who are killing the prophets. This is very exciting for people on the left. It's totally false because they throw out most of the Bible, which actually disproves the very political platform that they're trying to promote. But for a long time, the left has been trying to find ways to take the Bible back. And homosexuality was one area that was very difficult because it is so explicit, and the mandate for heterosexuality is so explicit. But now we're seeing the fruit of 30 years of scholars and publications and conferences where people have sought to massage the language to try to massage the interpretation of the original text until finally they've come at these So this collection of very strained and very contrived talking points that say that the Bible actually approves of homosexuality, that the true sin is homophobia, that gay people were made that way by God. And so the Human Rights Campaign is tapping into this body of theologians. I mean, they're kind of very low-level theologians in some ways. I mean, I don't want to be dismissive, but they're not the top of the field, but you know, they have the basic credentials to be able to be touted by the Human Rights Campaign, and they're going around and they're trying to package these talking points so your average person in the average evangelical church can go and debate a pastor, and if a pastor is nervous enough and maybe insecure in his understanding of the Bible, he might be persuaded to this. That's the goal of the evangelical guidebook. It's almost like organized apostasy.
Yeah, and I would have to say that just like everything else, there are so many issues. There are so many issues that you need to have knowledge of. And I find that most pastors don't understand. How could they possibly, Bobby, understand the complexities of the gender LGBT issues? I mean, those of us that work in it, it still gets confusing because of all the terms.
Right.
You've lived in it, and so you have a better, a cleaner, clearer understanding. But how could a pastor who's preaching sermons and dealing with family issues and divorce and, you know, poverty and all of the things, how could they possibly? So I find that they actually are easy prey to be misled on this issue, and they don't even know what's happening. So that's why we're talking today, because I want to sort of lay a marker down and help pastors and Christians to be smart and to come, let's step up to the plate here and get a little wiser than we have been in the past. And with the Human Rights
Campaign, I think also there's the problem of the organization of your average evangelical church consists of a pastor, but then there's all these other staff people. And I think these organizers, from what I've seen out in the grassroots, is the organizers can target the staff, the secretary, the nursery workers, the people who do the vacation Bible school, the youth ministry. That's a big target for them. And they get all of this pro-gay talking points and this pro-gay theology in through those means, and then the pastor is sort of stuck isolated in his own church. He doesn't want to lose half of his congregation.
Yeah, Bobby,
so
very interesting. We have to take a break, but when we come back, we're going to make a quick pivot here, because one of the outgrowths of the movement to mainstream homosexual identified persons in the evangelical churches is a recent conference that took place in St. Louis. It's called Revoice. And we want to center our conversation on that, among other things. My guest is Bobby Lopez, Sandy Rios, in the morning.
Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
Even as I speak, a conference is beginning in St. Louis. It's called Revoice, and the name indicates the organizer's ambition. They want to create a new voice for evangelical Christians on LGBTQ issues. What kind of voice are they seeking? A closer look at the conference indicates that they want evangelicals to accept LGBTQ identity as permanent and to welcome and celebrate LGBTQ Christians within congregations. They insist that they hold to the historic Christian biblical ethic that restricts sexual activity to marriage, defined as the union of a man and a woman. The problem arises with the conference's use of terms like sexual minorities and its open embrace of identity language when it comes to sexuality. Where does this lead? Well, consider this session summary for the conference. The session is entitled Redeeming Queer Culture and Adventure, and we are told that it asks, quote, "What does queer culture and specifically queer literature and theory have to offer us who follow Christ? What queer treasure, honor, and glory will be brought into the New Jerusalem at the end of time?" End quote. That is shocking language. The organizers of the conference want to celebrate LGBTQ culture, even styled as queer culture, while claiming to hold to a biblical model of sexual morality. Here's the problem. The Bible's teaching on sexual morality is not merely a matter of do's and don'ts. It is a comprehensive celebration of God's gift of sexuality and God's gift in making humanity in His image, male and female, revealed at birth. It is a vision of God's intention in creation and His commands for how His people are to receive this gift in holiness. The gospel promises that in Christ, every believer becomes a new creature. Conversion is to be followed by obedience to Christ and by the ongoing divine work of sanctification. There is no way that faithful Christians can celebrate what is contrary to Christ, much less propose that any kind of sin and brokenness, including sexual sin and brokenness, will receive honor and glory in the New Jerusalem.
Well, that was the voice of Dr. Al Mohler, who is the president of Southern Seminary, and I chose that on purpose. Now, Al was talking about the Revoice conference that we're going to be discussing with Bobby here. The significance of having him say that is that there has been a lot of controversy about the involvement of Russell Moore, who heads the ERLC, Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission, and Al Mohler, who was his sort of mentor. It would seem from some of our perspectives that Russell Moore has sort of led Southern Baptists in a bad direction on this issue. And it would seem to me that that was kind of a line in the sand by Al Mohler. That's my impression, and I'm glad for it if it's the case. I'm not sure that he and Russell Moore agree on this conference. But let's talk about it. What was it? What happened? And what is the controversy? Bobby Lopez is my guest. Again, his blog is englishmanif.blogspot.com, in which he tells his story, and you can get all the kinds of background and writing. Great stuff from Bobby. All right, Bobby, what was this Revoice conference? What was it all about? What it's supposed to be about?
Well, I think that Al Mohler did a tremendous, wonderful job in describing it and describing how it fits in with and does not fit in, to put it better, with the Bible. It claimed to be one thing, and then it very clearly we saw that it was something slightly different from what it claimed. It claimed that it was a resource to help people who struggle with same-sex attraction or with gender identity to live in obedience to Scripture. So it almost sounded like it was a kind of ex-gay therapy thing. When it clearly, as the details of the workshops and the speakers unfolded and as more publicity surrounded it, it became clear that it was nothing of the sort. It was really trying to find a way for people to hold on to the same-sex attracted identity, to have some kind of queer or LGBTQ identity in Christ. That is to say, they want to believe that once they've been saved and turned to Christ and they're in the process of sanctification, they're still identified as being gay. And they created this distinction, which I think is theologically totally inappropriate, between acting on something and dwelling on it in your thoughts and in your identity and in what you talk about. And we know from Jesus' own command, when he quotes Deuteronomy and he says, "You must love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your mind, all your soul, and all your strength." And that passage continues in Deuteronomy to say, "These words I give you today, which are the words of the law, you are to repeat and put on your forehead, on your hand, and talk about them all the time." So it's clear that this was a no-go from the beginning, theologically, because even if they're claiming that they're not going to engage in homosexual sexual activity, the fact remains that they're allowing their hearts and their minds and their prayer life and everything to be colored by this queer culture, this LGBTQ politics, this gay identity, which comes from the world. It doesn't come from God, and it's actually in conflict with what God designed. I was glad that Mueller made that statement, because that basically reaffirmed the content of what I had submitted as a resolution to the Southern Baptist Convention, actually in June for the Southern Baptist Convention's annual meeting. But my resolution, you know, was rejected before it made it to the floor. And now I look back at it, and I really wish that that resolution had made it to the floor, because with all of this controversy coming down the pike, that resolution really would have resolved and would have presented the Southern Baptist with a firm commitment on all these issues.
Yeah, I want to, I want to repeat the title of that workshop that Dr. Mueller cited, because there were lots of workshops that were concerning, but this is the one that probably is an example, the most egregious example that I know of why this conference was off base. I want to read the title one more time. It's a workshop at the Revoice Conference called Redeeming Queer Culture and Adventure. And so here's what it says. This is the description of this. For the sexual minority seeking to submit his or her life fully to Christ and to the historic Christian sexual ethic, queer culture presents a bit of a dilemma. Rather than combing through and analyzing to find which parts are to be rejected, to be redeemed, or to be received with joy, Christians have often discarded the virtues of queer culture along with the vices, which leaves culturally connected Christian sexual minorities torn between two cultures, two histories, and two communities. So questions that have until now been largely unanswered remain. What does queer culture, and specifically queer literature and theory, have to offer us who follow Christ? What queer treasure, honor, and glory will be brought into the New Jerusalem at the end of time? Bobby, I just want you to comment on that.
Well, it's so hard to comment on it because it is so distorted in its thinking. It's almost like the ravings of someone who is just not quite anchored in the same text that we are. You know, we don't need to save anything of queer culture. Depending on what he means by queer culture, I guess he could parse the word, but from what I'm taking it, he's talking about the literature, the music, the behavior, the social interactions, the mannerisms and everything of people who have sex with people of the same sex. It's basically the gay pride parade. I don't want any of that in the New Jerusalem, and I'm pretty sure that God does not want any of that in the New Jerusalem. That's all going to be destroyed at the end of time. So we don't need it. I mean, we don't need to celebrate it, certainly. And this is not something that we would ever engage in and claim that we are doing this in honor of Christ. I think it's terrible when there are Christian gay groups that march in the gay pride parade alongside the people dressed up as dominatrixes and the people who are half naked and the people who are throwing around sex toys, etc. I do not go to the gay pride parade. I would never take my children to it. I mean, I see that as something that is so anathema to what is clean and holy. So that workshop title would seem to be, that is probably the worst example, but from what I understand from people who went to the conference and reported on what happened there, it was actually worse than it looked at the beginning. I mean, they really were just full-on trying to push gay acceptance and gay ideology and really the bad fake gay social science that we know from our debates on gay parenting. They're trying to push that now as theology. So they're trying to say that people can't change, they're born with an orientation, and then now they're going back to the Bible and saying that's how God made them. And some of them have even published articles claiming that homosexuality predates the fall, that there was homosexuality in the Garden of Eden. I mean, this is getting into really, really scary territory. And it's so outlandish that Christians might be tempted to believe this will never come to my church, but that's not what we've seen, Sandy. We've seen that the more outlandish it is, the more likely it's going to end up in your kids' library in some local, you know, suburb with a drag queen reading them these kinds of ideas. This is very scary.
It is very scary. And the scary thing about it is, if we just were, we as followers of Jesus, were more grounded in our understanding of Scripture and more passionate and more had more of a sense of righteousness, I wouldn't be so worried. But we are living in such soft times, Bobby. Not now. I think a lot of Christians, their spirit has quickened this last several years. They are paying attention, and they've gotten much more serious about their faith, and they're crying out to God. So there's a lot of those people listen to my show. Thank God for them. But a lot are still sleeping. And a lot of pastors are still asleep. They're just asleep. They don't understand we are at war, a spiritual war.
Right.
And let's talk about, now, some of our mutual friends were not allowed to come to this conference. I think of Peter LaBarbera of Americans for Truth About Homosexuality. The other gentleman, I don't know if it's an ex-gay black gentleman.
His name is Stephen Black. he's white, but...
Oh, okay.
Yeah. His name is Stephen Black.
Okay, I'm sorry about that.
Yeah.
All right, well, Stephen Black.
Steve Camp, who was told that if he tried to register, they would call the police on him. These are all the people who disagree with them. Yeah.
So, I know Peter. I'll just say for Peter, he goes everywhere. Peter's very respectful. I love him. He used to work for me when I was at CWA. He covers these conferences, the gay rights, gay pride parades. I've never, ever in my life seen Peter debate on television or interact in any way with a disrespect to the homosexual community. He's a real truth speaker, kind, gentle spirit. So that's one of the people they banned from the conference. So who got to go? And first of all, before I ask you that, the organizer is a guy named Nate Collins. He's the founder. Now, what do you know about him, Bobby?
I don't know that much about him. I did try to interview him, and he did not return my request for an interview. I was only able to interview his friend, Karen Swallow Pryor, who did endorse the conference. But Nate Collins himself, I was not able to interview. What I do know of him is that he got his PhD at a seminary, and he is married to a
Southern Baptist. Baptist Theological Seminary with Al Mohler and Russell Moore, I guess. He also went to Moody Bible Institute. So, sorry, I interrupted you. What else did you
right,
say?
Yeah, so he got the credentials from these, these seminaries. So his pedigree looks kind of good on the surface. But he's married to a woman, and they have three kids, but he claims that he's homosexual even though he's married to a woman. And that's the part, I think, of his story that is the most troubling to me as someone who came out of a lifestyle and is married to a woman. Because
Bobby, explain that. Explain that. That's really important because you can explain it better than anybody. Why? Well, what's wrong? That's, he's just being honest. I mean, he's homosexual and now he's married to a woman. What's wrong with him saying that?
Well, because I do think that you have discipline over your emotions, especially if you've become a new creature in Christ. You do have to take an active role in your own thought life and in your own emotional life and your fantasy life. And, you know, if you are feeling temptation, you've got to do active things to root it out. And you have to direct your pleasure and your desire, and you have to give your sexual gifts to your wife. Your wife needs you. There's a reason why she is married to you. It's not just about you being married to her so that you can find God. She needs you. She needs the pleasure that you give her in the bedroom and outside the bedroom. And I think, from my understanding of women, I've only been with one woman in my entire life, thank the Lord, but I mean, from what I understand, I think that the vast majority of women are going to feel a loss of that pleasure and a loss of that connectedness if they know that their husband has a side that they can't ever own, that they can't be part of theirs. I mean, women really want all of you. They don't just want a little bit of you. They don't want you to have a part of your soul that's gay that they can't have. I mean, is that fair to say, Sandy? I mean, you're a woman, so I'll defer to you, but what do you think?
Well, I just think that whatever sin or temptation we struggle with, and all of us do, all of us could label ourselves by that sin. I just think that I'm with you, Bobby. I think we take on the mind of Christ. We take our thoughts captive. We take our emotions captive. We bring discipline and godliness and God. We're not out of control. We're right. We're not helpless victims to our thoughts, even though sometimes we think we are. And I think that you become what you think. If you dwell on thoughts, you know, if you label yourself, I'm a thief, I'm an adulteress, I'm a gambler, I'm a whatever, a liar, and you label yourself that, you set yourself on a course. And then you're doing everything you can to try not to do it, not to do it, not to do it, but you're not changing your mind. And that's your point, I think.
Right, and that's what I think Paul meant when he said it's better to marry than to burn. We figured this out thousands of years ago. Once you have a wife, if you totally commit to her, she'll keep you busy. You know, that's been my experience. These issues disappeared for me, you know, once I was married. I mean, because you know, you're busy loving your wife and taking care of her, and so you're not spending time fantasizing about things that are happening in a gay bar. I mean, you don't care. And that's where people want to get to. But a lot of these same people who are involved in this conference are also against reparative therapy. They're against sexual orientation change efforts because they have all these reasons for saying that basically the identity is something that's innate and can't be changed. And whether or not they say they were born gay, that seems to be the direction they're heading in, is ultimately saying that God created them and designed them to be gay, and that they are serving God by reconciling their gayness with their life in this world, which I just find, I mean, I find it heretical, quite honestly.
Well, and it's also sad because, Bobby, we're moving, and this we haven't touched. You touched on it now. We're going to sit on it a little bit more in a second on the other side of the break. But the practical consequence of declaring that you can be homosexual and Christian, or that you can label yourself and entertain that notion, and then, therefore, it makes it wrong to try to counsel someone to be different than the way God made them, which is straight or gay, becomes a serious problem for pastors counseling people. But more importantly, it becomes a serious problem for people in the lifestyle who need help. It's becoming, in some places, illegal to give them that help. So that's the other thing at stake in this kind of movement. We'll be right back after this. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
David Pickup says he became confused after being sexually assaulted as a child. But he went to therapy and says his interest in men disappeared.
It was all about me discovering who I really was.
A licensed marriage and family therapist, Pickup now specializes in reparative therapy, a controversial practice based on the belief homosexuality is created by a person's experiences. His therapy, he says, focuses on counseling people for underlying issues, abuse, neglect, or trauma.
There's an automatic, this is what a lot of people don't realize, there's an automatic, spontaneous lessening or dissipation of homoerotic feelings towards men.
The American Medical Association opposes gay conversion therapy. California and New Jersey have banned it for minors. But as of this weekend, the Texas Republican Party officially endorses it.
Oftentimes, it can do more harm than good.
Gay Republican Rudy Eftering says the therapy is largely unregulated. To make that point, he officially registered with Dallas County his own reparative therapy business.
It's sort of a joke, but it's very serious too, because there's people who go through reparative therapy that after they're finished are suicidal because they think someone has convinced them that they can change. And there's no scientific or peer-reviewed research that shows that is true.
Well, exactly. That's not true. I know firsthand. I know multiple people who would disprove that. You know, Bobby, I remember, his name. There was a famous psychologist, Jewish atheist, who was one of the leaders in mainstreaming or removing homosexuality from the list of mental illnesses or disorders in the psychological, whatever the term is, their chart of what were aberrations of personality. I can't think of his name. He's a very famous. Yes, Dr. Robert Spitzer. And I interviewed him when I was on in Chicago when this all took place. And you might recall that Spitzer, even though he was this rabidly atheist Jewish psychologist who was advocating for mainstreaming homosexuality, he came in contact with lots of ex-gays over the course of time. And he was just stunned at the change and how their lives had transformed. So he came out with a different position. He said, I was wrong. We were wrong about that. People can change. And the backlash against him was, as you will well understand, and certainly I will too, was so horrendous that he was forced to recant his amendment. But I'll never forget that conversation with him, Bobby. But the point is, of course people can change. You're Exhibit A today for us.
Right. I almost don't know what to say when people come with this vehemence and with all of this swagger and certainty that you can never, ever change. I think that the analogy we sometimes do not use enough is weight loss. There are many people who are severely overweight who are convinced that they can never lose weight, and yet you know people who lost 60 pounds. I mean, there are things that are very difficult, you know, that seem very hopeless, that seem very bleak, but yet, you know, for people who pray and who find a way and are blessed by God with a way out, you find a way out. And a way out for someone who is caught in homosexuality might be that there's a reduction in the amount of time that you spend thinking about this, but there's not the total disappearance. It might mean that you find that you can become functional with the opposite sex and you marry someone of the opposite sex. And then, like I said earlier, you're so busy that you're not even worried about whatever things you have in your mind about the same sex. There are many different ways out, but what is not true is that there's no way out. And that's what all these laws are. These laws are all essentially, they're not regulating the medical profession, they're regulating people. They're trying to keep people who have been lured into the homosexual lifestyle trapped there. So it goes hand in hand with the school efforts, with the church efforts, with everything in the culture. They're trying to instill in people a curiosity and a premature knowledge of what homosexual sex is, so that they experiment with it. If they experiment with it and they experience anything that remotely looks like pleasure or arousal, then they convince themselves that they are gay. And so this whole false ideology of being born gay goes to work on their mind. They start to conform their identity to that. They even conform their understanding of God to that. And then they're trapped. And then now they're trying to block people from going in and saying, no, we can't do it. That's why I submitted a resolution to the Southern Baptist Convention trying to get the convention to support efforts within churches to just use biblical counseling to show people what God's design is and to get them out of a lifestyle that is against God's design. But again, that resolution was rejected before it even made it to the floor. So this reaction against gay therapy, against ex-gay therapy, is so widespread that even in the most conservative, largest Protestant denomination, it's controversial to say that people can get out of it. I mean, it's stunning. And to give you a sense of how strange this is, the state of California still has not been able to pass the comprehensive ban on ex-gay therapy because there are even people on the left who think this is getting to be so totalitarian. They had to delay the vote until early August. So right now, as it stands, the Southern Baptist Convention is more staunchly against ex-gay therapy than the state of California is. I mean, we're in a very strange new normal, Sandy.
Yes, and I have to say that that's been one of the big concerns, and I'll say this, of the effect of the influence of Russell Moore on the ERLC and his influence on Al Mohler. It's been a tremendous concern. Look, I know Al Mohler. I've known him for a long time, and I have just such an admirer of his writing and teaching. He was the first theologian that I knew of, certainly in Southern Baptist circles and evangelical circles, who was actually writing on the theology of male and female, and he did it masterfully. So it's been a little upsetting to see some sort of alteration here, and it seems to me under the influence of Russell Moore, who has been critical. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, Bobby. My understanding is that Russell has been critical of reparative therapy. Has he been explicitly critical or implicitly?
I believe he said it was counterproductive. Yeah, he was very critical of it.
Yeah, so that's the problem. So if we get to the point where pastors and church leaders and youth pastors cannot counsel children and kids and adults to the biblical view, God's view of sexuality, we're in trouble. Let's go back to the Revoice Conference, Bobby. I know that Karen Swallow Pryor, she's a professor at Liberty University. She's a research fellow with the ERLC and close friend to Russell Moore. Was she an organizer, a speaker? What was her part in this?
No, she is friends, it seems, with some of the organizers, and she expressed her endorsement of it. So she was one of the people who officially endorsed the conference. I interviewed her about it. She was willing to give me an interview, which I really appreciate because most of the people involved with it kept everything very secret. And in the interview, what she basically argued was that, you know, she thinks that this type of conference would be helpful for people who are struggling with same-sex attraction to be able to resist the call of the culture, which says that homosexuality is compatible with the Bible. That if you can get people who are all struggling with the same sin together and have them converge in a certain place and affirm each other in their struggle to live in fidelity to the Bible, that it would be a positive thing that would help them to put off the pressure from the culture to act on their attraction. So that was her thinking about it. And I think on one level that it could be persuasive, but I would have to have a lot of trust in the organizers, and I would have to take a leap of faith from what I've seen in the past, because there are many, I'm sure you have seen this too. We have seen many iterations of this where people claim that they're going to find some third way, and then it ends up just becoming pro-gay.
Yeah, you know what? It's actually, Bobby, it's universal on all these issues. I just find that when, certainly on scriptural biblical issues, there's no half measure. You have to let your A's be A and your nays be nay. God's pretty clear about it. There's some gray issues, but not in the moral foundational principles. I want to go back quickly before we run out of time. Human Rights Campaign is on a campaign to alter the fabric of teaching in evangelical churches to infiltrate. They have a program which we really haven't described. I don't know. And I don't know if their thumbprint was on this. We do know, and this has been distressing too, that Al Mohler and Russell Moore have met with Human Rights Campaign. They met with them back in 2014 and I think other times besides that, which is I don't understand that, because I certainly do totally understand being compassionate to people who struggle with same-sex attraction or in the lifestyle, to neighbors, friends, relatives, and being compassionate and talking to them in a loving way. But we're talking about the advocates who are the enemies of the faith, who are laying traps. I don't understand negotiating with them. Do you understand that?
Well, I don't know enough to comment on their meetings with the Human Rights Campaign. I only know from the reporting that came out of that conference. I know that there were gay activists who emerged from it, some of whom felt disappointed. They felt that the Southern Baptist Convention wasn't moving fast enough towards pro-gay theology, and some who were delighted. They felt that whatever signs were given in those meetings were positive signs, and they emerged with the hope that the Southern Baptist Convention was going to change to their side. So what we're seeing now is that there definitely seems to be a certain slice of the gay movement that is confident that they're going to be able to do this. I mean, they're really proceeding with a lot of swagger, that they're going to be able to flip the Southern Baptist Convention. And, you know, that's why we have to be very vigilant now.
Yeah, and it's not just the Southern Baptist Convention. It's the Presbyterian Church of America, which has been very staunch. It's been the Presbyterian denomination that's held fast. And so they're kind of tied up in this, too. And Bobby, just say a word before we run out of time about this movie coming out with Russell Crowe and I forgot the woman's name.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, there's a movie coming out with Russell Crowe and Nicole Kidman about a Baptist pastor's son who is gay, and they force him to go to some kind of conversion therapy camp. I mean, it just looks like straight up political propaganda from beginning to end. I feel bad for Nicole Kidman and Russell Crowe. They may not realize just how propagandized this issue is and just how wooden and ideologically, you know, just two-dimensional the whole debate is. But yeah, it looks like it's going to be a really terrible movie, and it looks to me as though they're confident, again, that the Baptists are going to be guilted into changing their views on this. So
at least that's their intention. And so we're just laying a marker here for all of you to be wise as serpents and harmless as doves. Be very smart. Be very brave. Be bold. I was just talking to another evangelical leader who's a good friend of mine, and we were having this conversation, and he's really in a battle. I can't be specific about where he is, but I just said to them, he and his wife, you know, be bold. Stand firm. No wiggle room. Speak the truth. Stay strong. And I say that to my own son, who's a pastor and studying, getting his PhD in Scotland. He's in hostile territory now. And it's like, stand firm, son. Just stand firm.
Yeah, yeah. And unfortunately, this should have been a small issue relegated to the sidelines because it doesn't technically affect that many people, but it has become the central issue that the gospel is going to, you know, that we have to stand on to stand for the gospel, unfortunately.
Yeah, we do. Well, it's you know what? The law, Paul said, the law is a teacher leading men to God. So as we discuss these things, what we want to do, Bobby, and I know you do too, as you counsel ex-gay guys who are confused and talk to people who've come out of the lifestyle, it's redemption we offer. It's freedom. It's new life. It's God himself who is enough. He is all in all. If you never had sex again, God is enough. And so we're offering hope to people, and we don't want to be silenced and not be able to offer them that hope. That would be such tragedy.
Exactly. And in the
process of talking about this, we are helping people to just explore the biblical model of man and woman, which is kind of foundational to everything, scriptural. So,
yeah.
All right. So, Bobby, Englishmanif.blogspot.com is...
Yes, it's Englishmanif. So it's the word English and then the word manif, which is, there's a long story what that word is. I'm not going to get into it, but it's M-A-N-I-F as in foxtrot. So it's all one word, Englishmanif.blogspot.com.
Okay, we'll put that on our Facebook page so that people can read it, and they can go and read that. Also, they can read your testimony, and you always write such interesting things, Bobby. What are you writing on right now?
Well, right now I am promoting the book, The New Normal, where I contributed a chapter, and I am working on a larger academic work on the history of the Spanish Inquisition and the French Revolution and a bunch of stuff. But I'm just blogging whatever comes out, you know, along these ex-gay issues whenever they cross my path.
And your full-time job is teaching English, right? Are you still teaching? It's English, right?
Yes, yeah, English and Humanities, yeah.
Yeah, so there you go. Robert Oscar Lopez, the doctor. Thank you, Bobby. Thank you so much, Sandy. Yeah, appreciate your time so much. And this has been Sandy Rios. I hope that you have learned and that God has spoken to you through this. And pastors, step up to the plate. There are a lot of resources now where you can preach and be smart about this and be wise. And Southern Baptists, Presbyterian Church of America, all of you, we need to be strong. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.